Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, you know, life is good. Life is good, you know. It's the Cinco de Mayo, where we all just pretend that we're involved in the Mexican Revolution, and we drink cerveza, and we eat tacos, and, you know, life is good. But actually, it's a beautiful day today, a beautiful day. Nice, you know, to me, there's just that kind of perfect weather where the sky is blue and sunny, and there's a slight breeze, and it's like below 70, but it's still, like, I think it was like right around 68 today, and it was all just really good. So I made a shrimp stir fry for lunch. And I would say all in all, I am finer than frog hair. How about you? What's up with you?
Not much, just waiting for the weather to change.
Are we waiting for it to get? Are you still having some of that heavy rains and stuff? Or
This weekend got more rain.
Before you know it, it'll be getting really hot in that area, as it always does.
It should have been there already.
I know. It has been different this year. It has been really much cooler temperatures than you usually have. But it seems like it's been like that just like all over lately, you know. But absolutely, that's for sure. But we have rights from a couple different contests for tonight's topic because I did decide that I was going to fit our theme in to do with being May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, which is also, by the way, my sister's birthday. And let me do the math here. All right. So she is so happy 46th birthday to my baby sister. And not that she listens, but, you know, if she does, then she'll hear me say happy birthday to her. So very cool. And anyway, but the two contests I ran was the first one is the artwork of, let me see if I can pronounce this name. Ah, yes, Jose Guadalupe Posada. And he is a Mexican artist who was born in 1852 and died in 1913. He was a Mexican political lithographer. He used relief painting to produce popular illustrations. His work has influenced numerous Latin American artists and cartoonists because of its satirical acuteness and social engagement. He used skulls, calaveras, and bones to convey political and cultural critiques. And then the second contest was I decided I wasn't quite sure if that one was going to get enough rights, and plus I decided out of a whim that I just wanted to do one more because I came across this artwork called Ale Brijes, which is a colorful wood carving art that is made in the state of Mexico, of Oaxaca. I'm not 100% sure I'm pronouncing that right, but anyways, the first person to create the Ale Brijes, he was an artist by the name of Pedro Linares. And Pedro Linares actually was a paper mache artist. He worked in paper mache, and he had a fever dream in which he had visions of these creatures that were very colorful and like multiple animals, and he started making them out of paper mache. Well, eventually they started to be made from, you know, being carved from wood. And he was the first one to make them, to invent them. And then they caught the attention of other well-known and famous Mexican artists, including Frida Kahlo and her husband, Diego Rivera. So nowadays, it used to be that they were strictly just like I said, a mix of different creatures, which was why they're also known as chimera art or chimera creatures. But nowadays you can actually find them resembling like some of the ones we had in the contest I ran are ones where they're a specific animal. But the one thing that is always for certain is that, you know, or at least should be, is there will be no two alike. They're handmade, they're individually painted, they're, you know, as far as their color scheme, their shapes and all that, there's just no two that are exactly alike. But anyways, I came across an article about them and I thought, oh, those are just, you know, so much fun. I have to run a contest on that. So we definitely have some great rights tonight, so that to delve into, and with that being said, I'm ready whenever you are ready.
All right. Bar now. Bye. Random words by Jen. 9 hours of work a day with 1 hour lunch. Sometimes mini breaks in between. Repeat 5 times a week. Before pandemic, it is more than that. Need to wake up early to prepare. Even estimates to travel time, hoping not to be late for that day. During pandemic, waking up is not the problem. Even in your sleeping attire, just open a laptop and work, thinking of more time to sleep. But no. More demands just because of no travel, more time to work because no preparation. At first, it is okay since I have more time, but eventually it is tiring. I was hesitant to raise this. It is tiring, but life goes on. I guess life has its own way to get back at you. My body broke down and needed to undergo operation. They need to remove my appendix and stay for a week at the hospital. That's the only time I realized burnout is real. It may not be obvious, because it's always lurking, waiting for you to go down. It is like living and dying at the same time. It will take days, months, or years to heal from this hell. But I hope I can keep going, fighting, and find the peace that I need. End poem.
Wonderful read, Rex. Yeah, I'm really glad to see Jake. We haven't seen them in a while, so, you know, it's good to see them entering the contest and being inspired. The particular artwork that they wrote to was of a skeleton standing at a kitchen counter with a knife preparing food. And I like that they took this artwork and related it to modern times. And, you know, it's interesting to me how, and it's so true, you know, you would think a pandemic would have been a time to get rest, but no. You know, just open the laptop and work, thinking of more time to sleep, but no, more demands just because of no travel, more time to work because no preparation at first. It is okay since I have more time, but eventually it is tiring. You know, I think this is something that many of us can relate to, you know, pandemic or not. You know, I think you can relate to the idea of eventually feeling physically and emotionally exhausted. And then, of course, you know, the body breaking down and having to go under surgery, that's always a difficult thing to do. Even a simple surgery like an appendix being removed, you know, and can be difficult to go through, especially, you know, when you have obligations, you know, to yourself, to your work, to family, friends, whatever. And I like the hope in the end line. But I hope I can keep going, fighting, and find the peace that I need. You know, it is difficult to heal. It's difficult to heal physically and emotionally. And I do hope also that Jake finds that peace that they need. So wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Ah, the wonders of broad-scale experimentation. How they leaked through the system. Yeah, they knew this wouldn't work, but they did it anyway. The fact is, work as a singularity only works if you are the singularity, like a writer. Hey, then you don't mind because you're always on your laptop anyway. The thought of spending, well, that 9 hours a day with a 1 hour lunch, that gives a lot of perspective. Most people bitch about the going to work and having to work those 8 hours plus 1 hour lunch or the half hour lunch and 2 15-minute breaks. But they don't realize everything else that comes with that human interaction, the thought of speaking to people in the office, or if you're working the other side of the counter, the people you engage in every day as you feed them. There is interaction. We are social animals. If you take that away and put somebody in front of their computer who is not akin to that, like a writer would be, because his social interaction is the pages that he keeps turning out and the characters that he's born out of him. This doesn't work on a broad scale level this way. And it's not like you go back through time and we had other pandemics. The world didn't shut down. We didn't stop socializing yet. They'd like to do it all over again just for the hell of it. So the idea is the mentality breaks down, the body breaks down, because all you're doing is thinking about work. You don't have any away time. That's the point of having a job outside the home. You bring it home, you have it in the house all day long, and that's what you spend on instead of doing the other things, like the skeleton at the kitchen counter. You're born into something. Yeah. We put you as the that noted angle in THX1138. The powers that be design your day, give you the necessary drugs to make sure you're productive during that day, and they tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and when to go to sleep. It don't work.
Yep. No, and that is so true. That is so true. There are powers that be that want to be too much in control. And I have to agree with you. We truly are made to be social creatures and don't have an appreciation for that. So, well said there. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
Miscreant's Ball of Hypocrisy by Jenny the Deep.
All right. Working themselves to nothing but bones, chasing cretins, casting their own stones, hypocrites running you over as you flee, evil is as evil does, set yourself free. Dancing on graves, celebrating bad habits, smoking cigars, smelling of dung and ashes, burning down all what they have built, all to appease the cult's grandmaster guild. Skeletal, sinful secrets spill, scratching smooth surfaces sorrows fill, sweeping them under the rug, hiding haunting scars like an exoskeleton bug. Twisted spines, cracking, unexpected skulls, spreading strife and dismay like contagious carbuncles. The more you fall, the more they mow you down, guaranteeing that you stay hellbound. End poem. And Jenny was inspired by a multiple of multiple prompts. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, shit, I think I just gave it all up on the last one because it fits this one perfectly. But I did like the bite in contagious carbuncle. It was nice there. And the idea of what it said, dancing on graves, celebrating bad habits, smoking cigars, smelling of dung and ashes, burning down all that what they have built, all to appease the cult's grandmaster's guild. I like that stand. It has a nice ring to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this definitely does have plenty of bite to it. That's for sure. I like, and on a technical level, I like the alliteration and the rhyme, especially the S alliteration and skeletal, sinful secret spill, scratching smooth surface. I really like how, dancing on graves, celebrating bad habits, smoking cigars, smelling of dung and ashes, burning down all what they have built, all to appease the cult's grandmaster's guild. I like those lines because they do speak on truth being covered up and buried, and like she says, even the second stanza speaks on that. And the idea of how people are, they cover their own asses and don't want to admit that what they're doing is hurting people. So just a really strong imagery throughout. And I also really like twisted spines, cracking, unexpected skulls, spreading strife and dismay, like contagious carbuncles. And that is true. Strife and dismay, really negative attitudes are definitely just spread from, and because, the keeping people, you know, negative and down helps to control them. So definitely an excellent write by Jenny, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
The Skitterer by Darkened Auras. It skitters through dark locales, in sewers, closets, under your bed. The furry six-legged creature wants to eat your heart and steal your head. You can hear it clacking away in the distance, threading together collected bones, making clones of new monstrosities and other horrific unknowns. The sunken eyes are like a black abyss that if you stare too long, you'll notice it stares back at you, detecting that something's wrong. It's like you're in a trance, too paralyzed with fear to move. With each victim that it has claimed, its methods do improve. Hear that? The jerky rapid movements? You have become its pick. It's coming after you tonight. Don't delay. You must run away quick. And pause.
Great read there, Rex. Oh man, this is great. This has one of those classic sci-fi horrors, science fiction, movie feels to it. Anybody who reads this should play the sound effect she provided in her AN, which is a bug crawling sound effect. It's very cool. But I think out of all the pictures I posted, this one was the most different. It's what looks to be like, I would guess, a scorpion maybe, but it has a human head almost like to it. I know it's not a spider because it has six legs, but my guess would be a scorpion. But anyways, it's very creepy looking, and the artwork. And she really goes great. I mean, and she does a great job with the rhyme and the imagery and telling this story about this creature. I could easily see this being made into a book or a story. You can hear it clacking away in the distance, threading together collected bones, making clones of new monstrosities and other horrific unknowns. It's like you're in a trance, too paralyzed with fear to move. With each victim that it has claimed, its methods do improve. Now, great creepy lines all the way through, wonderful storytelling. And Rex, your thoughts?
The book has been written. I read it many, many, many years ago. It's called Whispers by Dean Koontz. It's all about a serial killer, except there's a big twist in it. Apparently, as a kid, I think his grandparents or his grandmother used to throw him in an outside cellar, you know, like a root cellar, and they were filled with what he could hear, the whispers. And he couldn't scream because there were millions of them down there. It was, and they crawl all over him. And it twisted his mind to the point where he went into serial killing. But what they didn't know throughout the whole story was he wasn't one. He was two identical twins. He'd always have an alibi on one hand, yet the other one was doing the killing. So this walks that same thought of the angle on this, it skitters through dark locales, sewers closets under your bed, that nice outdoor root cellar is a perfect venue. You can hear it clacking away in the distance. They'd hear it whisper, because it's all you hear, the shuffling feet in the darkness, because they weren't making noise, but you heard their legs walking all over everything. The sunken eyes, black abyss, definitely rolls on the same thing. Too paralyzed with fear to move, again, turning them into twisted entities. And that thought, you must run away quick, but sometimes you can't.
Absolutely. I did not know that. That's very cool. And you said it's called The Whisperer?
Whispers by Dean Koontz.
Oh, Dean Koontz. Yes. Okay.
That was 1980.
I never read that one, but I have read a lot of his stuff. He is good. Yeah. I think one of my favorite books by him wasn't actually a particularly scary book, though I did like his scary stuff too, was the one, I don't know if you remember reading this or if you ever read this one, the one about the dog that was like super intelligent. You remember that one? Like it had been like genetically altered or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the dog basically could like communicate and was like super intelligent, like some science experiment.
No, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, I'll have to. And I'm horrible at remembering titles because it's been like 30 years since I read it. But it's actually it's not it's one of his not really scary ones, but it's just a really well told story and very engaging characters. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
Dem Boom by Weaver of Dreams. That's our card. Oh.
Yes, we do. Always nice to hear Kate's voice. Here we go.
Goddess Aphrodite, sans her nighty, is not a pretty sight. Some gasp with fright, while others delight. Who knew she could be so flighty?
Ah, great read and write there, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. It almost has a limerick type flow to it, which I like. It's very enjoyable. I like that title too, Dem Bones. And the painting that she wrote to, for anybody who can't see, it's a painting of the famous artwork that everybody knows, the birth of Aphrodite, where she's standing on the clamshell. It's basically like a remake of that, but it's done in pencil or ink drawing, and it's all in skeletons. So, great humor all the way through. But I have to say that it's definitely those beginning lines. Goddess Aphrodite sans her nighty is not a pretty sight. That really just, gave me that big grin and made me laugh. So wonderful lines, Kate. Always enjoy your sense of humor. And Rex, your thoughts?
What? A double dip in humor and innuendo, because she's playing both sides of this. It's not a pretty sight. Some gasp with fright while others delight. So, you're getting into the morbid angle of morbid attendees.
Yeah, she did. That was fun, like you said, the way that she double-dipped. Very cool. Very cool. All right. What do we got next?
The final breakaway. That was yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. The final breakaway by Kay Heartless. Death is not an exit. It's a starting point. The opening stretch of a cross-country bike event. Brutal uphill climb, our skeletons as cyclists pedaling without helmets through rough forest paths. An afterlife peloton, all of us vying to be first to the prize, what's on the other side of life's finish line. Skeletons can draft for days, stripped of religion and race all the same, bare bones confused. And as the steep climb continues, we forget the details of our own face until our frame is ready to make its final breakaway. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
There's a little nice little play in that. And the picture itself offers up the motif, so she ran with the actual thought of skeletons on bicycles, which was a nice play in itself. And then the walk on that cross-country bike event, the Peloton, an afterlife Peloton, all of us vying to be first at a prize. I mean, that kind of hits on the idea of what's on the other side of life's finish line, the idea of everybody's in such a race to death that they don't bother living life on this side, this side of the coin, but are willing to vie for first prize on the other side of the coin, which is offers up a note to futility. And then the final thought, until our frame is ready to make its final breakaway, that angle kind of hits on the idea of the bones finally rotting away until, hey, you're nothing but dust. So what really have you won in that run, that race, that march forward to from flesh into dust?
Yep, exactly. I had the same thought. With those end lines, the idea of the final breakaway, the falling apart of the bones. And I definitely have to agree that this one has, it's great with its imagery and metaphors. And she did do a wonderful job with the wordplay and, you know, drawing the message out of the artwork. Death is not an exit. It's a starting point. The opening stretch of a cross-country bike event. And I like how that line speaks on the idea that, the idea of moving forward to another, like, level of life, to another event in life, you know, and rather than looking at it as an exit, looking at it as a new beginning. I really like where she says, in afterlife Peloton, all of us vying to be first to the prize, what's on the other side of life's finish line? Like, rather than living in the moment, you know, and appreciating the moments we have in life, we're in too big of a hurry, you know, to see what's on the other side. I also like the lines after that where it says, skeletons can draft for days, stripped of religion and race, all the same. You know, according to the show Bones, we're not all the same, but you have to be pretty professional to notice the little differences. There are supposed to be bone structure differences in the different races, but you don't notice it unless I think you know what you're doing. But for the most part, you know, we line skeletons up and, you know, other than being able to tell if they were an adult or a child, you know, there's no, you know, colors, there's no skin color, there's no hair color, eye color or shape, there's no, and then the religion I thought was a really important one, because I feel like when she says stripped of religion, you know, there's this sudden sense of this knowledge of acknowledgement of equality once of reaching after reaching the realm of death. So, excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Song of the Reaper by Mystic Muse. If you will listen close, then you will hear the song of death that plays for every man. It's a melody that most will fear as Azrael reveals his guileful plan. No one escapes the tune the reaper plays, for death's a crop that everyone will reap. The lyrics sing demise's dark melees and souls that Hades' lair will safely keep. The song begins a distant threnody, a ballad that one day shall fill the air. It's then that death will come collect his food as Charon waits for us to pay our fare. If you can hear the music loud and clear, it won't be long until the reaper calls. His song's the final one that you will hear before the veil of endless darkness falls. And Paul.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and a great write by Dave. And he wrote to what looks like a skeleton wearing like a dress or a veil So a female figure playing like, I don't know if it's a guitar or another kind of a guitar-like instrument. I really like this title, Song of the Reaper. All the way through, we have great imagery, great rhyme and flow. I like how he brings the mythology into it with the mention of Hades and Charon. And my favorite lines are, no one escapes the tune the reaper plays, for death's a crop that everyone will reap. The lyrics sing demise, dark malaise, and souls that Hades' lair will safely keep. It's that thought that, you know, that there is no escape from death, you know, and I also like the song begins, a distant threnody, a ballad that one day shall fill the air. Wonderful word choices here. It makes me think of the song. Who is it that sings Here Comes the Reaper? Is it Blue Oyster Cult?
Yeah, Don't Fear the Reaper. But that was a love
song.
Don't
Fear the Reaper. That's it. Don't Fear. Sorry. Yep. Yeah, it made me think of that song. You know, great lines all the way through, and a wonderful acknowledgement that death comes to everyone. Yeah, so excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It reminds me of something a little bit different, kind of like the minstrel in the gallery from Jethro Tull. It walks along that kind of that same line. The minstrel is the, in this case, the is death, and it's kind of, and it rolls. If you look at the song itself, it kind of plays around on that angle itself. The one who actually comes along, it's supposed to be the minstrel, is offering up the tune of something to add a touch of gleefulness to the to its audience. But in this case, this particular minstrel is only there for one reason, and he's the back end of things. And Dave hit on the idea of perfect. Azrael reveals his guileful plan. Nicely touched. Azrael being the angel of death, and rolls in. The lyrics sing, demise's dark melees, and soul that Hades' lair will safely keep. And what else? I like the thought that the song begins, a distant threnody, something that you hear, say, middle towards later end of life. You get that, like, that little notice of them. As things break down, you realize the song is starting to play. And then a ballad that day, one day, shall fill the air. So you know what? It's something that tingles along until it's then that death will come collect his fee as Charon waits for us to pay our fare. So it is. Everybody passes through. It's not something that that anybody can avoid. And the fact that some people spend too much time on it belays the fact that, you know what? You're not any more special than the next one. Get on with your life. Enjoy what you have before it is time. Just don't know when it comes.
Amen to that. That is so true. Yeah, we really need to spend time just really enjoying life rather than fretting about keeping death away. So, very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
Under the Epidermis of Stories by Freya. Yours?
Okie dokie. All right. Let me try something here. There we go. Under the Epidermis of Stories. If I could see clearly now, past the built-up epidermis of stories of wax and flesh, if I could see past the humorous irony of dancing, laughing bones where I live and breathe, death is not anonymous. It has a face, a name, a history, employers, coworkers, artists, some healthy, some not, some mad, some not. Loss of parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, many beloved pets, uncles, aunts, fish, friends, acquaintances, neighbors, some naked, some clothed, some fit, some not. Cats taught me the most. Drunk, sober, high, rich, poor, homeless, religious people, sinners, blends, proud, humble. After passing, some traveled to all their friends, one set free from another side. Lead feet, bird bones, silent and loquacious, all of them beautiful, all of them facet polishers. The first two were scary, especially my unborn brother. Almost took mom, too, with her iron grip hands. Even angels could not break free from. Sun-bleached animal bones found in forest and beach, shells, sticks. I keep my dead within me. End poem. And, oh, wow, what a just a, an amazing write, inspired by multiple prompts. And Rex, your thoughts.
If I could see clearly in our past built up epidermis of stories of waxen flesh, if I could see past the humorous irony of dancing or lancing bones, I like that. I can see clearly now the dead are all here. So, and that's exactly what she ended up putting into this, right on the back end of this. I keep my dead within me. The idea of, there's a whole lot of truth in that, because you know what? Everybody comes from somebody else. And that DNA, that history is written in your bones and everything else that makes you up. So the idea of keeping them within is a note to, hey, you can honor them by being the best at who you are and remembering them in turn and passing on that thought. So as I hit on last thing, nobody is free of this. And she listed a name, history, employers, co-workers, artists, some healthy, some not, some mad, some not, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, pets, drunk, sober, high, rich, poor, homeless, religious people, sinners, blends, proud, humble. It doesn't matter. It's not getting past anyone. And she listed everyone. So, you know what? This is a good message. Nicely done for me.
Absolutely. It really is. It's a beautiful message. On the parts of our history and our memories and our shared experiences that we carry with us, you know, and I really like how she speaks so strongly and with such an emotional impact on loss and grief. I also really like where she has the one line by itself, cats taught me the most. I thought that was a wonderful nod to her pet cats, but also, you know, a wonderful nod to the strength of her mother and how scary that time must have been. The first two were scary, especially my unborn brother almost took mom too. With her iron grip hands, even angels could not break free from. You know, sun-bleached animal bones found in forest and beach. There is something really fascinating about bones. When I went for a walk today, me and Nessa came across a deer that was nothing more than the skull and the spine and the rib cage. And it's just fascinating to look at bones and to think that that was once a creature of flesh and blood, you know. And, you know, I like how I feel like the last line, sun-bleached animal bones found in forest and beach, shells, sticks, you know, speaks on the idea of those things that she likes to collect. But as you were mentioning, Rex, the end line speaks really well on those things we collect within ourselves. With his, you know, our history, our experiences, and just so beautifully written and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
All Will Be Well by Ben Hart. All will be well, she says, to bring comfort back to a place in time. All will be well. It doesn't feel like that. Sometimes I'd say that be lying, more like with every breath I take. Today I was offered cocaine, and I didn't take it, because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. And everyone I love has gone to bed again, or maybe they're awake, away from here. A place and time that felt smaller in the plague that is absence to the pugilist staring down his gloves. And if he'd won the fight, would he have been the one she loves? Would he have been the champion? I keep telling myself that I am Adam, not Snake, Kenobi, not Maul. But every day that I wake, I feel ripe for the fall. And Eve said, just take her, but I'm not that tall, because she is the moonlight and I am the cold. And that she loves everything I'm not, but I am nothing at all. So she loves only dust. She loves. She loves leaving. She loves leaving on Sundays. She loves leaving. She loves. She loves that I am an angry drunk and that I plan on dying young. She loves me for the smoke in my lungs and the pain in my eyes and the black of my heart and the way that I walk and all I ache and call art and the god of my youth. And the love I owe you, and the way I look new, and the dirt on my nails, and the earth that I hail, and the people I failed, and the pain in my eyes, and the way I will die, the way I will die, how she loves the pain in my eyes. All will be well. What a lie. You couldn't have loved me for a night. Watch the dawn. Watch something rise. Watch how it changes the look in your eyes. All would be well. This is the life, and I want one moment that transcends what God intended before he ends it. End poem.
Great read, Rex. Wonderful write by Ben. Just a powerful, hard-hitting line, beautifully written. You know, I like the raw honesty, and today I was offered cocaine and didn't take it because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. I like that because I think it speaks on, I mean, it could also just be, you know, a true event that actually happened, because I know Ben did have a birthday in April. I also think it speaks on humanity's obsession with having the perfect death, with how we oftentimes think, you know, if I could plan my death, you know, what would I want it to be like? If, you know, of course, oftentimes we want to go like quick and easy and quietly, no pain, no mess. I also really like, and everyone I love has gone to bed again, or maybe they're awake, away from here, a place and time that felt smaller in the plague that is absence to the pugilist staring down his gloves. Yeah, it feels like that idea to me of speaking on that battle that you can't win, or you win the battle, but you've lost the war. I also like how this speaks on love and death. You know, and our obsession with both of them. She loves that I am an angry drunk and that I plan on dying young. She loves me for the smoke in my lungs. I feel like the she is actually a personification of death, who looks at that person who is angry and violent and has self-destructive behavior. And sees that and is drawn towards it, you know, and really a powerful line. And the pain in my eyes and the way I will die, the way I will die, how she loves the pain in my eyes. There's this obsession, this sense of obsession with death and you know, what it will be like when we finally reach that end. So wonderful lines and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I can see that, but because of that third stanza, I got to walk another way. Today I was offered cocaine, and I didn't take it because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. Sounds like a crack baby. And everyone I love has gone to bed again, or maybe they're awake, away from here, a place and time. That felt smaller in the plague that is absence to the pugilist staring down gloves. And if he'd won the fight, would he have been the one she loves? Would he have been the champion? Or is that walk on that note of a crack baby being born? And then that thought, I am Adam, not Snake. Again, it's kind of reached along that angle of what if that crack baby had thoughts enough to explain itself and how they feel. It kind of walks on that. But it also hits on that idea of that which, if that angle is right, then it walks another life, because does that baby ever get to live a proper life without the addictive qualities that he was born with?
You know what? I like that thought. I like that. Yeah, and I can definitely see that. And, you know, that is so sad, you know, that children, babies are born into this world paying the price for their parents' addiction. You know, so great observation there, Rex. All right, and what do we got next?
We have... The Notorious Mr. Death by My Angel Scene.
All right. The Notorious Mr. Death by My Angel 3. The Notorious Mr. Death is not such a bad old chap. He's reliable and consistent. You have to give him that. He might not even like the job. Has anyone thought of that? Perhaps he aimed to be a god, but went a little off track. Mrs. Death and Baby Death have high demands and costs. A three-bedroom house in Limbo can set you back a lot. If I met Death tomorrow, I'll be very polite and kind. He might be filled with sorrow from an infinite morbid grind. I'd like to have a chat with Mr. Death over a hot and delicious cup of tea. And before he bids my eternal rest, I'd inquire how his week had been. End poem. Oh, now that one was quite clever and fun. I enjoyed that. And your thoughts, Rex?
Ironic, filled with sardonic humor that kind of bites at the notion. Hey, you know what? He ain't such a bad old boy. Let's sit down and have a cup of tea, because you know what? I want to know what's going on in your life. That you, hey, the wife and kids happy? And the thought of a three-bedroom house in Limbo can set you back a lot. Well, nobody thinks on that angle, so it works as a humorous motif to, yeah, you think of him as evil, but, well, maybe he's just another working stiff.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I have to agree with you that it does have that nice bite of sardonic humor. It makes me think about the idea that, you know, people always see death as evil, and understandably so, as, you know, it takes away people that we love and takes away people, you know, that help the world. But in reality, death is neutral. It's more like an equalizer. You know, it creates, it's part of the balance of life, you know, the balance between life and death, and that is needed. And I like the humor in this, and I like the rhyme. I particularly liked, he might not even like the job. Has anyone thought of that? Perhaps he aimed to be a god, but went a little off track. And I think that's relatable, because I think she takes such a grand figure as Death, a mythological figure, and says, you know what, maybe just like so many of us, life went off track. And then, of course, Mrs. Death and Baby Death have high demands and costs. A three-bedroom house in limbo can set you back a lot. So wonderful lines all the way through. Very well done. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
El Tango de los Muertos by Jati Primestaya. Hear the bony fingers on the guitar strum as skeletal figures dance to the beat of the drum, drowned in an intoxicating deathly serenade sung by those who had long decayed. It is not a gloomy and mournful scene where tears are shed for those no more to be seen. For this is Dia de los Muertos, a joyful remembrance of those who will never pass from our reminiscence. Instead of a grave and a solemn adagio, they play a lively and passionate allegro, as though spectral limbs swayed to the ghastly tango in harmony with all who had passed away long ago. So cease your mourning and let us prance, for the dead do love to sing and dance. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really liked this one. Beautiful rhyme flow, wonderful imagery. I like the musical references. It's such a celebratory piece, celebrating the Day of the Dead, when our when the ancestors and relatives come to the physical world, and that celebration that's part of Mexican culture. So I really liked the title, and I really liked the imagery in this, and how he says, drowned in an intoxicating deathly serenade sung by those who had long decayed, but 'tis not a gloomy and mournful scene where tears are shed for those no more to be seen. For this is Dia de los Muertos, a joyful remembrance of those who have never passed from our reminiscence. I like that he reminds us that it is a day of celebration, that it is a day of honoring, and a day to reconnect with loved ones, just great writing all the way through and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, this is Walks Around Another. Instead of hearing da 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 da, there's a glee and happiness here. The thought of actually celebration, just like doing an Irish jig for a wake. You celebrate and you enjoy the day with the sharing. Just like on this, they go down to the resting places and put out food and drink for that day. It's a matter of honoring that those that came before and never forgetting those that walked before they did and gave them the possibility of life. So it's always a notice, keeping those, well, used to be, keeping those closer to you even after death.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really do believe, and grief is definitely understandable, but I do believe that life should be celebrated. So, yes. I definitely think the Irish wake is the way to go. So, very cool. All right. And what do we have next week?
Going to go to the right song. Celebrate, celebrate, dance the music.
All right. Day of the Dead by Betty Page. Come, let's celebrate. Let's all get high, drink some beer, barbecue all night. Dance until the dawn, red roses between lips as we're swinging hips. Come honor the dead, remember our ancestors, and have some good food. We'll drink fine red wines, sangria, margaritas, key lime mojitos, converse, having fun, pouring champagne, eating cake, favorite bakery sweets, to Spanish dancing, wearing flowers in our hair, lifting our skirts high, mariachi sings, playing acoustic guitar near clear blue oceans, and poem. Are you all right there, Rex?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, in that case, your thoughts on the poem?
Well, celebration, yeah, boy, but this one's far flung. Key lime mojitos, sangria margaritas, champagne, beer, barbecues. Damn. Pouring champagne, eating cake, favorite bakery sweets. Plus all the mariachi, but this is full flung. You think the Pope had died, and they were celebrating that. This is kind of the whole town thing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is definitely a very festive piece. You know, great 575 lines. I like that she brings the dancing in because, you know, the dancing being such an important part of Hispanic culture. And I have to say that, you know, that the sangrias, margaritas, and key lime mojitos sound particularly good. And, you know, this is definitely a poem of decadence. Having fun, pouring champagne, eating cake, favorite bakery sweets, all the way through, you just, the music, the dancing, the food, the drinking. It's a wonderful poem of celebration and decadence. So very well done. All right. And what do we have next, Rex?
Posada's Wedding by Judge Eliot Six. In Alameda Park, a Sunday serene, a painted scene with hues pristine, where Jose Guadalupe Posada's art captures Mexico's culture, a vital part. Amidst the trees, the figures stroll, Rivera's mural, a story to unroll, of history, of legends, and of strife, of heroes and villains, and of life. Frida Kahlo, with flowers in her hair, holds Diego's hand without a care. Their love, a passion, a bond so strong, a story that lasts, a memory so long. Pancho Villa, with his sombrero high, rides on horseback with a rebel's cry. Zapata, with a stern face and gaze, fights for justice in so many ways. The children play with laughter and joy, their innocence untainted, no ploy. On death, a character so grim, reminds us all life's not so prim. In Alameda Park, the past and present blend together, a scene so pleasant, a tribute to Mexico's rich heritage, a tapestry of life and its image. Posada's art, with Rivera's touch, a masterpiece that's loved so much, a Sunday afternoon that we can share in Alameda Park, a moment so rare. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Rex. I really like the rhyme and the imagery in this and how it wasn't just paying tribute to Jose Guadalupe Posada's art, but also to the rich heritage of Mexican culture. I really like the picture of the mural that he put up. You know, amidst the trees, the figures stroll, Rivera's mural, a story to unroll of history, of legends, and of strife, of heroes, villains, and of life. Frida Kahlo, with flowers in her hair, holds Diego's hand without a care. Their love, a passion, a bond so strong, a story that lasts, a memory so long. And he goes, you know, and throughout different character people who are an important part of the Mexican history. And, you know, and I like that he gives a nod to that, and he gives a nod to, you know, just standing back and looking at this particular artwork and looking at the history that it represents. So wonderful right and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It is a great blending of not just the singularity, but the two people at the same time that walk a different tone and offers up the thought of the history itself, the children play, laugh, enjoy their innocence, untainted, no ploy, while death, a character so grim, reminds us all life's not so prim. Then Mr. Bryce just stands, kind of hits the note, allowing me to part the past and present, blend together a scene so pleasant. A tribute to Mexico's rich heritage, a tapestry of life and its image. And the back end, a Sunday afternoon that we can share in Alameda Park, a moment so rare. There's a little bit more in that noted thought to that last line, in Alameda Park, a moment so rare. Yeah, sort of, we're not doing enough on that. That's right. When you wipe out history, you wipe out the color and the flavor that comes with it. So I think there's a little bit deeper note with that last line.
I like that. And yeah, you're right. You're right. The history should not be wiped out. And there is a deeper note in those end lines. So excellent comment. And what do we got next?
Hell of a Cook by George Williams. And you've got a SoundCloud.
Yes, we do. All right. Here we go.
My dear most welcome guest, do please come in. Oh, let me take your coat. How good of you to bring us wine. Yes, perfectly on time. We are, as per, a bit behind. Death's still in the kitchen. Peeling some potatoes to go with the stewed goat. Unusual, I know, but not for us. Offerings, you see, are often cheaper cuts. I always wish they'd send us up more fish or something from the sea. But mustn't gripe, it's been slow cooked since lunch and is the type of thing that goes so well with red. How clever of you picking claret, quite the hunch. Blood of Christ, you're right to pair it. Best not mention all the raising of the dead. We keep ascension talk to after dinner. Anyway, she'll be right out, can't rush the chef, death has her plan. Total mystery to man. No, don't go in, you'll just see mess. Devastation, truth be told. It'd be a shame to ruin that old appetite with all the blame and suffering and hurt. She's rather sensitive to that. So many of our guests will dwell on broken shells, the cracking of the eggs and not the souffle that it makes, or think it came from somewhere else, focus on the loss and miss the point. You can't have one without the rest. But I digress. Let's sit and have hors d'oeuvres. You'll want to try a glass of this. I always serve it with a kindergarten class.
Oh, man, that was great dark humor at the end. But I have to say, it was a wonderful write. First of all, I have to say thank you for the recording. Wonderful reading voice. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And I like that they have that he read this in the tone of, the voice of someone welcoming people into a house that death cooks for. Death's still in the kitchen peeling some potatoes to go with the stewed goat. Unusual, I know, but not for us. Offerings, you see, are often cheaper cuts. And then, of course, the stewed goat and, the mention of offerings takes you back to the idea of how many cultures throughout history, offered up the sacrificial lamb or the sacrificial goat to death and to the gods that represented death. I like the mention of quite the hunch, blood of Christ, you're right to pair it. Let's not mention all the rising of the dead. We keep ascension talk to after dinner anyway. And I like how this speaks on the idea of how we tiptoe around the topic of religion and we tiptoe around the topic of death. But I did feel like there was definitely a bite of dark humor in those end lines that I very much enjoyed. Let's sit and have hors d'oeuvres. You'll want to try a glass of this. I always serve it with a kindergarten class. Ouch. So excellent, excellent, right? Clever and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I wrote something very much like this one time. It is a little bit of humor, but he's walking a different role because that note to the goat is indicative of the title itself, Hell of a Cook, and the author of The Goat, The Ram's Head, and The Sacrifice and all that. It walks a different tone. And this is the guests here are getting their last meal because they're going down. That's the idea, the thought of picking a claret. How clever of you picking claret. Quite the hunch. Blood of Christ, you'll write to pair it, but that's not mentioned. Raising of the dead, we keep essential talk too after dinner. Anyway, should we write out? Again, that notion, there'll be no raising of the dead here, no ascension because you're descending. And then that the author, she's rather centered that so many of our guests will dwell on broken shells. Cracking of the eggs and not the souffle that it makes, or think it came from somewhere else. Again, that idea of walking on eggshells because there's fear there. Don't piss her off. You're already hellbound. And that thought, the dark humor, the last one, let's sit and have hors d'oeuvres. You'll want to try a glass of this. I always serve it with a kindergarten class. The note there is, you know what? There's more to this than meets the eye. You've been so bad because of what you've been doing that, you're definitely going away for everything that you've dug into over the years. So cheers.
Great observations there, Rex. And yes, I can definitely see that now that you mention it, that the idea of that Last Supper before they go tumbling down into the depths of hell. Well, very cool. Very cool. And all right, what do we got next?
A Mother's Bequeath Gift by Jenny the Deep.
All right, and I believe, no, we don't have a sound call for this one. For some reason, I thought we did, but no. Okay. All right. Elegantly carved gifts by her frail hands and kisses, polychromatic colors painted on as stitches, smoothly sanded down, soft for her children, made by their mom who has become ill-stricken, stuck, secretly sullen, spitting up, sick in bed, won't let her kids see her like this, so she covers her head. As Cinco de Mayo approaches, so does her death sentence. Hiding her discomfort, she prepares them for independence. Able to celebrate the festive parade, she holds tight to the memories made, like her kids hold on to their vibrant colored gifts. As the parade passes, her head begins to drift. On her deathbed, she hugs her angels one last time, telling them of the hidden compartment their gifts have inside. Ask them to open, not to open, though, until her eyes close, that inside each animal are the lockets the girls chose. Hold these alebrijes close to their heart, close to your heart, she requests. Sentimental, priceless trinkets to them, she bequests. A horse and a dog being the girls' favorite animal. Now they hold Mama's gifts in their arms at her funeral. And poem. And, of course, now we have started into the rites inspired by the Alebrijes. And your thoughts on this rite, Rex?
A last offering and gift. Hey, you know what? They understand. They know she's sick. She understands. She knows she's passing. So that opening stanza gives rise to the last. The thought of carving up the gifts, sanding them down smoothly, offering up the colors, and then made by their mom who has become ill-stricken, then the sort of notable, the sink of the mire, she knows it's coming, and she wants them to still celebrate the old ones, and it's able to celebrate the festive parade. She holds tight to the memories made, like her kids hold on to their favorite, to their vibrant colored gifts. As the parade passes, their head begins to drift. So, kind of a note, and then later, she hugs the angels one last time and tells them not to open their gifts because there's a secret compartment until she has passed. So it's I guess the alebrije is that gift or a bequest, so to speak. And then that note, sentimental priceless trinkets to them. She bequests a horse and a dog, being the girl's favorite animal. So she's carved on the horse, carved on the dog, but is also carved out a spot and tells them how to open that once the time has come for them to open it. And inside is something, the sort of a necklace with a full remembrance, a metamorite. So it's one that they can hold close to their hearts and all the time.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, this is definitely, it's heartfelt and it's emotive. It's a wonderful story, right, on a mother who is facing her own mortality and, you know, having to, you know, wanting to give one last gift to her daughters that will have lasting meaning to them because it was, you know, not only something that they picked out, but something also, more importantly, something made with her own hands. I really like this, and especially the lines, stuck secretly sullen, spitting up sick in bed, won't let her keep see her like this, so she covers her head. As Cinco de Mayo approaches, so does her death sentence. Hiding her discomfort, she prepares them for independence. And I really like that line, she prepares them for independence, because I think, you know, whether we're immediately dying or many, many years in the future, any one of us who have our parents, you know, that is our goal, is to prepare our children for independence. I also really liked the lines on her deathbed, she hugs her angels one last time. Yeah, that one really pulls at the heartstrings. So beautifully written and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
My Art Deco Ram by Mystic Muse. I have a ram whose wool is blue. It's odd because his mother, you, his wool has wool that's thick and pearly white. His father, though, is quite a sight. His dad got in my LSD, and its effects are plain to see. That's why the ram is filled with lines and other rather strange designs. I'm sure the dad was pretty high when he gave sex with mom a try. But all worked out, for in the end, the mom birthed my Art Deco friend. The crowds come here both day and night to marvel at the wondrous sight. There is no doubt my ram has flair. He wins me ribbons at the fair. End poem.
Great read, Rex. Oh, man, I really enjoyed this one. It's like a whole new twist on Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know, he really took that picture of that blue ram and just really ran with it. All the way through, great rhyme and flow, great imagery, great humor. You know, just great storytelling. I have to say it's that second and third stanza, though, that really just cracked me up. His dad got in my LSD, and its effects are plain to see. That's why the ram is filled with lines and other rather strange designs. I'm sure the dad was pretty high when he gave sex with mom a try, but all worked out, for in the end, the mom birthed my Art Deco friend. And it definitely, I have to say that it does have a very art Art Deco type vibe to it. So I like that he brought that up, but the whole humor about the RAM getting into the LSD, just fun stuff for sure. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Rama Lama Ding Dong. Since he got to the LSD, my guess is, hey, yeah, should have kept the peyote buttons off to the side somewhere else. Either that or maybe, yeah, should have made sure the sugar cubes were well hidden in the refrigerator. Anyway, it does kind of bite into a new flavor of why he is who he is in the moment, because you know what? Yeah, I should have told Daddy, but I let him have it anyway. Or rather, he let Mommy have it.
Yep, exactly. Great comment. All right, and what do we got next?
Paper Mache Menagerie by Vamp Dixon.
Mexican folk art paints me their mythic world, a paper mache menagerie with the dark forest of the within a dark forest of the dying, all vivid fever dream hallucinations, colored vines blooming, flowers across geometric patterns materializing in the land of the dead, bulging eyes wink from the other side as elephant arms wave for a hug, painting tradition into the swirls of this rainbow-sculpted Noah's Ark. Pieces of lizards, cats, birds, and bats, creatures mixed and matched, bright and bold, serpents' tails and butterfly wings, dolphin fins, spikes and paws, add a leg, remove the horns. No two ornamental monsters are alike. In this dream world of the imagination, reflecting the rare artists inside and the variety of their diverse culture and home. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, it's a great tip off the picture itself, playing off the angle with everything, but it also kind of walks on the tone of Dave with that LSD. But yeah, these guys are not playing with the peyote because they lack the colored angle of offering up these effigies, these notes to real life in fanciful coloring as well as outrageous. It is an outrageous look at creatures that you see all the time, cats, bats, dogs, and everything else. So it is a celebration in itself, just for the imagination.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I really liked this. I felt like she either already knew this or she did her research. And either way, I thought that was wonderful because it shows a knowledge for the topic of the Alabrejas art and how it was originally made out of paper mache, how, as I was mentioning earlier, no two are alike, and they were came about because of a fever dream. Now she says up in her AN, Pedro Linares was a Mexican artisan who created the first Alabrejas in the 1930s. He claimed to have had a fever dream in which he saw these fantastic creatures in a creepy forest, but they were so brightly colored that he wasn't afraid of them. He was then inspired to create these colorful paper mache sculptures that would become known as Alabrejas, which, by the way, anyone who doesn't know, Alabrejas is actually a made-up word. There is no actual Spanish word. It's a word that the artist Pedro Linares made up and gave to his creations. Another interesting thing about this artwork is that while it wasn't originally a historical part of the celebration of the Day of the Dead, in modern celebrations of the Day of the Dead, they have become a part of it. And I really like where she says, bulging eyes wink from the other side, and elephant arms wave for a hug, painting tradition into the swirl of this rainbow-sculpted Noah's Ark. You know, I thought rainbow-sculpted Noah's Ark was just a really great line to describe this artwork. And a wonderful nod to the culture, to the history of the artwork. And I also like those end lines, reflecting the rare artists inside and the variety of their diverse culture. And another interesting thing, some people, you know, actually say that I keep stumbling over this word if I'm not directly looking at it. But the alabrejes are actually can also be a representation of a spirit animal or a spirit guide, that each person has an alabrejes that is their guide. And they're actually in the contest I ran for this artwork. You go to the article, I provided a link to an article where you can read about this artwork. And one of the things it has is a link to a test, you know, a quiz that you can take just for the fun of it. And you take the quiz and it tells you what your alabrejes is. And mine was a turtle and mockingbird. So, you know, I'm not saying there's any validity in that, but it's just a fun little thing to do, and you can find out what your spirit alabreje is. And cool stuff, but wonderful write by Vamped Vixen. Very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Top 15, Cat's Eyes by Chris Bond. Cat's eyes on roads, mine are too big to behold. A famous song would describe them as kaleidoscope. Prey struggles to hide with eyes this size. It's only a matter of time before I devour them. My eyes bring me fame, appearances on TikTok and Instagram, many a page. I must be all the rage. Count my followers, believe what I say. I'm one pretty pussy cat.
This was definitely a fun and clever write. I was really glad to see that Chris was inspired, and I like the direction he took this artwork. You know, first of all, a famous song would describe them as kaleidoscope. You know, great nod towards Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I like this all the way through, and it's difficult to separate it because it just leads so nicely one section into the next. But, the little bit of darkness in the second stanza, and then how he brings us into the humor of modern times, the obsession with, like, TikTok and Instagram. My eyes bring me fame, appearances on TikTok and Instagram, many a page, I must be all the rage. Count my followers, believe what I say, I'm one pretty pussycat. I really like that he took that turn there with the whole idea of this kaleidoscope psychedelic cat becoming all the rage of its obsessed followers on TikTok and Instagram. So, very cool, right? And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, he's right with that thought with the kaleidoscope in that first stanza. It imbues that note of fractalization and how it changes with just a slight twist or turn of the kaleidoscope itself, or in this angle, it's how you look at the eye from left to right, up, down, straight on. There is that fractalization, which gives you a new look into the eye, which offers up that note, either bug-eyed, as in flies, or a lizard. So you've got to kind of cross match. And praise, and then hits on that. Praise, struggle, and hybridize the size. It's only a matter of time before I devour them, which also hints at a morphism from one species to another one. And it did like that back end. It does offer up, yeah, the dependence on what is offered, especially by those supposedly likes on that page, which has proven quite the notes of, hey, a lot of those people don't really exist.
That is so true. Absolutely. Yep. Very cool. Great observations. All right. And what do we have next?
Wrong one. Let's see. Ah. But Falling in Love with a Winged Dragon Elephant by Pink 35.
All right. I have fallen in love with a winged dragon Elephant, having to buy it, of course, as is it signed. What artisan created this piece of bright gorgeousness? I look for a signature. The phantasmagorical creature has none, no matter. She is from Osaka, the ultimate home of the Alabrijes. Pedro Linares had a fever in the 1940s. His fever dreams turned into fantastical creatures, made first of papier-mâché, painted in Zapotec patterns, circles, dots, and stripes. Did he know he was starting something big when he made up the word Alabrijes? Colorful folk art made more famous by artisans like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Arturo Caballero. Alabrijes are hybrid creatures carved in wood, painted in bright colors, representing animal totems or familiars. They are part of the pop culture of Day of the Dead parades. Horns representing earth, wings representing air, fins representing water, and dragons representing fire. It makes sense. I am completely drawn to the winged dragon. End poem. And wow, what a wonderful write. I really appreciated this one. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it looks like Pink has found her totem. Works well. Look at that. Winged dragon, Elephant, artisan created this piece of bright gorgeousness. Look for a signature. Phantasmagorical creature has none, no matter. She is from Osaka and the ultimate home of the Elephant. I think I did. Looking for the signature, but still finding none. Wanted to see if it holds a particular note from the thought, whether it's a Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, or Arturo Caballero. Maybe I found this a good luck piece that has a name on it too. But a note of painted in a Zapotec pattern, circles, dots, and stripes, and sort of she offs up animal totems or familiars, and then the horns representing earth, wings representing air, fins representing water, dragons representing the fire. So nice touch bringing it all home as a singularity representing the full scope of earth itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree with you. I really like that her attention to detail in this and how she pays a tribute to the artwork, to the history of the artwork. She's mentioned quite a bit of the stuff I had mentioned earlier with Vant Vixen's poem, but she brought in other stuff that I hadn't mentioned, and I'm glad she brought it up, was that the zeopatic patterns, of course, you know, being after the zeopatic people of the pre-Columbian era, and then also how the different the different parts of the animal, of the creation, represents the different elements. You know, the horns representing earth, wings representing air, fins representing water, and dragons representing fire. You know, and I like that she brought that up because, you know, it's an important part of, you know, of the idea of how, even though the with the bright colors and the mishmash, it looks like all chaotic, there's this kind of sense of balance within the artwork, bringing in the different elements. And I also like where she asked the question, did he know he was starting something big when he made up the word Alabrejes? You know, and that's clever because, you know, it is really one of those moments. And you got to wonder, not only when he made up the word, but when he woke up from that dream, when he woke up from those fever dreams and started making these colorful little creatures, did he truly know how much he was going to impact you know, Mexican culture and Mexican history, you know, especially the of his home state of Oaxaca, you know, I also really liked the use of the word phantasmagorical. I thought that was just a perfect word choice. The phantasmagorical creatures. You know, and then, of course, bringing in the other famous artists that became a part of this movement. So wonderful lines and very well done. All right. Do we have any more left, Rex?
Yep, last one right now.
Okay.
The Phantom Born of Night by Creatistically Inclined. Twin harvest moons blink widely from behind two pine snag pupils, narrowing, harrowing slits asunder, vacuuming in night's loitering light, diving high up to full mast from their copper paprika tharp helm, a duet of black velvet sails gulp and surveil the chilly breath of a late evening song. Focus, key and tumbler, locked. Extrasensory intuition marks the moment of decision. Adrenal jolt injection, vital vascular dilation, intramuscular carbonation, tensile stressor, maximum pressure, elastic snap. Patter, 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 rump. Up, aloft, in the air, red tail rippling like a rudder, gale kiss speed, wind raspberry flutter, through the chute. In the coop, feisty, eye, double size, salivating, testing, smelling, tasting, senses drowning in a bubbling hot bath basting, twitchy bristle whiskers flick, cold damp muzzle grins, ivory cage stakes slide from under, a black thistle mustache, looming, staring silently, fantasizing violently, an imposter smile encroaches, closer, irreverent, eerie. Callous poacher. Impend, impale, snap, crackle, squish, gushy gurgle, warm like trickle, down the gullet, quiet. A chilling hush, hanging on a lonely feather, fettered feebly in the air, rocking, swaying, to and fro, thick atmosphere, descending, floating, down, down, down. Upon final rest, it hammers down against the floor, a deafening clap through every board. Amidst commotion, a yellow glint, a drip of red, a beam of black, the thief of life bends like steam out of the shed. Propelled by dust, a cloud of rust, red ribbon trail, swiftly tapers toward opening eyes of earth and skies, pink amber glow horizon, inviting, emphasizing, dark's hidden curtain lifts its hem. Devoured, gone, no trace of suspect to condemn. Not an echo of a shadow betrays discretion to clandestine hauntings of the phantom born of night. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say bravo on that one. This was just an excellent write. I mean, the use of movement, wordplay, imagery. I like how it goes into the idea of the whole experience of listening to a cat run around at nighttime. There's a playfulness to it, and yet almost at the same time, in some points, almost like a horror movie feel to it. I really thought, I liked the way he shaped, not necessarily shaped, but he, like how he put his lines in different ways, you know, sometimes drop, like the word down, dropping down. A great way to play with spatial awareness, you know, and twitchy bristle whiskers flick, cold damp muzzle grins, ivory cave stakes slide from under a black thistle mustache, hunger, looming, staring silent, fantasizing violently, an imposter smiles, encroaches closer. You see it. You see the idea, to me anyways, of the cat on the hunt, you know, that thinks it's the mighty hunter. Impend and pale, snap, crack, squish, gushy gurgle, warm light trickles down the gullet, quiet. I tell you, I need a cat like that for this house with the mice that get in here. Oh, my gosh. You know, but just very clever wordplay, strong imagery. It kind of, the style kind of reminds me, what's the style they call it, dirty pretty? It reminds me a bit of that. I also like how it has a almost a vignette type feel to it, even though it's not broken down into sections. And the end, I really like the end, not an echo. I mean, I like it all the way through, but I like the end because it makes me think about how cats have this way of causing, being so mischievous and yet come out looking innocent in the end. Not an echo of a shadow betrays discretion to clandestine hauntings of the phantom born of night. You know, wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Actually, it works. Well, he's done it with the note too. This reminds me of the Flying Dutchman, that ship that just materializes out of the fog. And it's always there because there's the mystery behind it. And he rolls into that language. Where is it? Where was that? Darting up high to full mast from their copper petruga flop helm, a duet of black velvet sails gulp and surveil the chilly breath of a late evening song. You get that, the thought of the sail unfurling in that moment. Then you get the patter, 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 badarum. As the sail finally unfurls in that moment. And again, up aloft in the air, red tail rippling like a rudder, gale-kissed speed, wind raspberry flutter. Again, that thought to a ship sail, through the chute, in the coop, feasty eye, double-sized, salivating, tasty-smelling, tasting, sensory drowning, in a bubbling hot bath, basting, and then twitchy bristle whiskers, the cold bat muzzle grins, a black thick thistle mustache, hunger. Again, that note to that ghostly ship's captain in the moment. Impend, impale, snap, crackle, squish, snap, crackle. The thought of the sails snapping and crackling in the wind. But then again, there's a little bit more warm life down the gullet, quiet. There's almost a note, even though it's going to the cat, there's that note of a bit of grog in the moment. A chilling hush hanging on a lonely feather, feebly in the air, rocking, swaying to and fro. You see that notation of something that just rocks forth and forth, slowly back and forth as it comes down to rest against the floor. But it does. I like the cleverness in this because of the aspect of walking, the phantom born of night, that ship that comes along and sails into life and then out just as quickly as it appears.
I like that. I like that. Very, very cool observations there. And yeah, definitely great wordplay throughout. So Excellent, right? I look forward to reading more of them in the future, and I hope they're inspired again for future shows and contests. This has been a great show tonight. Wonderful lineup of poetry, as always. Awesome to hang out with you, Rex. Let's go ahead and promote some upcoming shows. So, of course, everyone, make sure to join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Saturday. You can join Aphasiana and Babbler for Part Sinner, Part Saint. 10 p.m. on Saturday, you can join Gray Eyes Smith with Bad Company. 12:30 a.m. on Sunday, you can join Arcana and Stellina for Delving into the Depths of Darkness. And then that brings me to you, Rex. Why don't you tell us about the contest that you're running for your Sunday show and for Tuesdays After Midnight?
Well, we've got Marking Time with Greg Brown on Sunday. Some fun to be played with there. And Rolling Stoned for After Midnight, some quotes by Keith Richards.
Awesome. I am looking forward to both of those shows. I don't know about the Keith Richards one, but I might delve into that. It is some great prompts there, but I'm definitely going to be trying to write for the rhythm and rhyme contest. Great songs put up. Of course, make sure everyone to keep an eye out on all the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And me, myself, I actually have four contests up. For next week's Twisted Tuesday, I have The Art of Mahmoud Farshian. For next week's Break On Through, we have two contests running, and Stellina will be joining us for that show. We have Break On Through, Classical Music and Surrealism, Music and Surrealism, and then Break On Through, Cyril Rolando Music Art. And like I said, we've got a whole lineup, great lineup of shows. I know Gray Eye Smith is running two contests right now that need rights, one for his Saturday show, one for Bad Company. And the other one he's running is a quote prompt for next week's Art of Seduction. But as always, Rex, great show, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night.